I got back for a little week.
Well, you want to skip some of it now and start in to move it faster so I'll get your life story on here, and then you'll tell me side stories later. You see? Second part of Jack Crook's story of his life before he comes to Alaska.
So, after we got the ship painted up, we stayed one for 2 days, eh? And the Empress Line always has one ship to come into port 4 days before the other one leaves. So in case if anything happens to the ship that's in port, why, the other one can take over the mail and deliver it. Mm. They allow you 1 day's grace, and it's $500 a day for everything over and carrying mail. So then we started back, and we got to Vancouver, B.C. in May, and I didn't want to re-enlist again. I didn't want to sign on again. We wore white uniforms in the RN and blues in the Pacific. We carried Naval Reserve officers, we carried the Naval Reserve flag, and wore similar uniforms. So on the 9th day of May, I got my discharge off the ship. 1 week later, the Guggenheim were shipping men to Dawson. So I went to this place where they were selling, where the selling permit business was. You give the man a dollar, you know, and then he...
Well, you remember what boat you got on down there to come up?
Don't worry.
This is a mistake. When you come up to Dawson, you come by
a rail. Not mistakes. No, this is from
Vancouver,
B.C.
Well, how did you travel?
How did I travel?
Mm-hmm.
On the Princess May.
That's a boat?
Yes.
Now I remember the boat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Princess May.
I was just a kid.
Mm-hmm. I came up to Skagway, Alaska. Now, when you're crossing the, there are two rough places between Skagway and Vancouver. One is, before you come to Ketchikan, what's
yeah,
those two places?
There's narrows in there. I know what you mean.
I'm not talking about the Wrangell Narrows or anything like that. Wrangell's later on. There's two good places. I went and took a nap in the afternoon, everybody was sick, so I got out of it, but I thought I took a nap. Well, anyhow, I can't think of those two places. So we got a schedule, and then we stayed in an empty building all night. Then left the next day on the train for Whitehorse. Then we came down at one of the river boats on the Dawson, steamer Dawson. And got to Dawson, and we went over to Yukon Gold Company's office, and they sent us out to these camps, different camps. That was at the corner of King and Second then.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Pioneer Hall is now.
Mm-hmm.
That was Yukon Gold Company's office. The man by the name of Thomas from California was the manager. So I looked around Dawson. I looked at that camp, and it was two and a quarter a day, and returned back to Vancouver. Well, the wages in Dawson was $4 a day at the time. Well, there's one man who wanted to quit and get away from there. The next policeman, a Scotsman from Vancouver, and I quit at the same time and come into town, and went to work for a lobby went out to the end of a log drive. I had to pull these logs in, you know, see. So after I ran down the fall, let's see.
That was about 1910?
No. This was the same year, 1908.
1908.
Mm-hmm. So I went out and picked some blueberries and went for that lobby a while, and I don't remember what else I did. So what? Oh yes, I went out for the Yukon Gold Company. Again, under different wages.
That was called the Yukon Consolidated.
No, sir.
No?
Yukon Gold Company.
Yukon Gold.
Yukon Gold, yes. And I changed my name a little bit, put it into Cook, see, so I want to get the extra money. So I went out there first and worked on the pipeline. And then from the pipeline, let's see, there's a dishwasher and a waiter, two Englishmen there. They went to town. So my foreman asked me where I'm going up in the kitchen. So I went up in the kitchen. I had back cinching on this wooden pipeline, redwood, California redwood.
Mm-hmm.
They put, the builders put two or three pipes on the end, 2-3 bands, iron bands, you know, and just cinch them up a little bit, and one on each side, so that you work opposite each other. One man tightens up on that side, while the other one tightens up on this side. Just a steel band around there. Then if somebody puts some more bands behind them, and then we are called back cinchers. So I went in there, up in the kitchen, and then this dishwasher come back again, and then the cook, Paddy Reagan, he asked me to straighten up the cash for him. Being that I worked in the grocery store, I made a good job in straightening up the cash. Then an old man was waiting table there, that had been some kind of wrestler or something like that. He got kicked with one of the Googie's horses, and he laid off, and I took his place in the dining room. Then these two Irishmen again, they took an oath and quit altogether. They went to town, and two Liverpool Irishmen took the job inside. They didn't want to get their hands wet, so they went wet in the table, and I had to pick the job in the sink. That was for pearls. So then I stayed with the sink. Then in the... we had one table there. We called the hog table. Everybody that sat on that table, there was 150 men. Everybody sat on that table, grabbed everything they wanted, cleaned to pudding or pie or whatever it was, when they started to eat. I was sitting on that table first. I found that out. I got told that. So one day, there's a man come rushing in there, and he says, "Oh, there's a bear out here. I think I got it. Want some help with it?" So we went out there, him and I both, and finally we located it. Now I says, "Be careful now." We had both guns, the other pistol and the other gun, and the rifle. I says, "There may be just enough left in it, but it might tackle you." So we just had about two grunts left. Then we come back and got a gang, went out there to try and get the cubs. So we got on both sides, and they had a gunny sack, and grabbed one, put that in the gunny sack. Then I tried to use my Mackinaw for the other one, but we never could catch the other one. So if we fell the tree, it would jump and run off into another one. We had to give that one up. They started to climb up to get it. Person, they just act like cats, you know. They started to like they're spitting at you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got the one that tied that up in front. They'd just walk around there all the time, you know, on the pole. Well, later on, let me see. I got in the kitchen with a night baker, I guess, finally. And we transferred from that place, up by that pipeline camp, to Lapine Ridge. And there was a, Lapine Ridge, there was a ditch there. And then there was some iron pipe there. Where it was steep, they had that iron pipe, the pressure.
With
that to pipe the water, yeah. Where it went right straight down and then right straight up.
Yeah.
See, because everything...
Oh, siphon.
Yeah, siphon, that's right. Because they had everything from... They had the intake at 12 miles, then there'd be a ditch, then there'd be a flume to take it round it was high,
mm-hmm.
and then come down to the pipe. See,
mm-hmm.
See the camp above there was Kentucky Point. I worked there the next year. There was a bird around there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't finished this year yet. So we worked there until it was closing downtime in the early part of October. That was the time they had a trial for a man that I'd been outside and brought two other men with him. I think they were friends. And these men, after he got to... after he got to a certain place there on the road, he takes one man out in the bush. Then he comes back and tells the other man he's got a bear. Wants him to come out and give him a hand. And he kept on trying to push him ahead. He'd already shot this other man, see, to get his money. He brought them into the country. And he kept poking this man with a gun to get him to go ahead. So he kind of run, he got away, and he got to the police, and they turned around and picked him up and found him in the tent. And I think he's the one that was hung in about 30 days. I just traveled before I left. So I got up to, got down to Seattle. I left there in the early part of October. The last boat, the last White Pass boat, generally left somewhere about the 12th, but any boat after that would not be White Pass. Some other independent boat that took a chance and charged you just about twice as much to get you to White Horse and didn't guarantee to get you there. Might have to go on the trail the rest of the way wherever they got stuck.
They get stuck in low water in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So, alright, I went out and Jack Watt from Dawson, he went out and then Skagway blew in some of his money and sold me down some gold for $14. And that's, then, when we got to Seattle, there was Seattle boat in Skagway.
Mm-hmm.
So we got aboard that, boat. When we got to Seattle, I was to stay there a couple of days and go back to Vancouver. Well, we both stayed the same place, and he went up to Renton the next morning. In the meantime, that day I met a man I used to long shore with in Vancouver, B.C. And he was married, and I showed him Mr. Goldust, and he took me up to his house, and I stayed there all night, and showed, introduced me to his wife and mother-in-law. He talked about wanting to come up to Dalton and saw that gold this spring. So we walked back downtown again to the place where I'd been stopping, and here was this here Jack Watt waiting for me. So he wanted to get this Goldust back. He says, I can get a job for you out at Renton. So I got the Goldust back, so I packed up and went out to Renton. And these people happened to be English also, at the place where we were stopping, the bunker boss and two other coal miners working there. So after about 2 weeks, I said, here, I bought this job I'm supposed to get. So then this bunker boss, Bill Dinning, was his name, he took me out to the outside boss, and then I went to work the next day on Monday morning. Later on, Jack worked about $10 off me, and I didn't pay him for the gold yet. Then he takes a notion to go over to Nanaimo, B.C., says, we'll go back up in April. And I writes to him, I never got a word. And when it come April, I quit the job and went back up to Dalton. So then I went to work for Horn Brothers. I stayed at the Principal Hotel, which is now some other name, I'm forgetting it, but just alongside where that auditorium is on that corner. Corner second. The auditorium is just up in the middle of the block. Well, I forget what the name of that place is now. But that was the principal that time. Jack McNeely was running it. So I went up to this place, looked for Horn Brothers, nine below Bonanza, and then stuck a pick in my foot. Pick and cross, Grand Cross to Cross went through my shoe pack. So then I stayed around Grand Forks for a little while, and I doctored myself. I didn't go to any doctor. I didn't want doctor. So I got that fixed up. And then after that, this is all I've got to think fast to try and...
Don't talk too fast. You talk slow.
Well, I was trying to get in what I could.
Do you remember the names of some of the saloons and was the line running when you was there? What went on?
Lowestown. There were two streets in Lowestown.
And what kind of... Were they having fights over there and drinking and card playing and everything?
Well, I never heard of any fights. There was at least... The brewery was over there, the O'Brien Brewery, the one that brought the buildings down here, that is the equipment down here, started this brewery over here.
That's the one that's here in Fairbanks today?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's from the O'Brien Brewery. And then there was at least one saloon there, the Rose Lee, I think they called it. Now that was in 1909 I was speaking of now, just after I'd come back. Oh yes, I didn't mention... No, I haven't mentioned about coming back yet, had I?
No.
And also, I went, in April the 8th, I think the 7th or 8th, I left to go back. The ship stopped in Vancouver, I saw a brother, I told him to get up and go up to the house and get some underwear or something, he wouldn't let me off. Well then, I got to Dalton and, went to work for the Horn Brothers. I say I stuck a pig in my foot there, and I haven't mentioned about the trail yet. When we got to Whitehorse, there was three of us there together, a Canadian and a Swede. And we spent our nickels and dimes for odds and ends around the town and then started off that evening. The stage left that evening and got as far as Tequila, 22 miles out of town. Well, we started out and we got to this first roadhouse about 9 miles out. And met this Canadian there, he was having his supper there. Then we said we were going on. So then he walked with us. We walked to this 22 mile to Tequila, got there 1 o'clock in the morning, and stayed with us the next morning. We got up probably about 12 o'clock or something like that, and left in the afternoon. And the next road out was only 18 miles, called Little River. So we made that Little River that day, and then we figured on making two roadhouses one day and one roadhouse the next, which they called posts out there.
Yeah, they were not called posts.
They called them posts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and there were 23 miles between each post, most of them. Now, that 18-mile one, and then the two 23s, mm-hmm. one going to Stewart River, and one from Stewart River to Wounded Moose, those were the two 23s. The rest was all 22s.
Oh, did they have horses
staged?
Horse stages, yes.
Yeah. So, the white passing vehicles. Well, we got to this Little River the next day, stayed there that night. We want to get up early in the morning to make the two posts. And the woman talks out of it, said that she had fighters there and she didn't want to get up that early, I guess. So, said it was a tough trip between that post. So then we listened and started later on and made to this next roadhouse. And the next morning we get up 4 o'clock. And we leave there and get to the next roadhouse at 11 o'clock, 7 hours between roadhouses. Then we wait till noon and eat, and then rest till 1 o'clock. Then make the next roadhouse at 8 o'clock at night. Well, this Canadian was always behind because he had an overcoat and he had a, you know, kind of a Gladstone bag, see? Well, all right, we had to go across the lake. And then this, we started a squad after we got across that lake, the Swede and I. We're just about a mile and a half from the next post.
Were you walking that time?
Walking,
oh,
yes. We're mostly over the trail.
Mm-hmm.
So we squat like this here, and then when you get up, there's kind of stiff after walking so far. After walking 42 and a half miles. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'm going to go on to the road. I said, we've got to be there by 8 o'clock. We've got 21 minutes. So I starts off and I come walking in there just like I was catching a train or something like that. And then I sit down on the couch there for half an hour or so and pretty soon he walked in. Well, then I guess we had something to eat and went to bed. And that other man, that Canadian, he come in somewhere during the night. So the next day we made a trip from there to roadhouse just this side of the Yukon Crossing. So from there we intended to make two roadhouses.
This is the map. The map of the
Yukon. Yeah, but this is all there.
Here's Dawson City, and that's where you come from, Whitehorse.
Yeah.
That way. See, this is the map coming up to Dawson.
I remember Rosewood Creek. That's where we're getting on our way towards Stewart River then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's Stewart River, right there.
Where's the Yukon Crossing now? Can you see it?
I don't see the crossing marked. It isn't marked on that. If it is, it'd be right up in here.
Oh, here's some names here.
Mm-hmm.
I can see them.
No, then Yukon Crossing ain't marked on that. It's an old map.
The Stewart River, 60-mile river, 40-mile river, Anderson Creek, Rosewood, I remember Rosewood. I know on Rosewood Creek, that's before we got to Stewart River, where there's two men in that creek there. They had some Hudson Bay tea, first time I drank any.
Yeah, Hudson Bay tea?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a grain out, there's some of it out in the woods here someplace. Mm-hmm. It shows just like a leaf, a tea leaf, you know.
Yeah.
It's brown at the back and the hollow part, you know, and green on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And dry it. Well, anyhow, we stopped at this roadhouse before we got to the Yukon Crossing. And,
say any more on that map.
So, that wouldn't show the road out, is there, anyway. So, we stopped there. There happened to be, I don't know whether it's Montenegrins or Slavs of some kind. It's up there, the roadhouse was the first place that we started in to make our two trips. And they were jabbering all night, so the Swede got so he couldn't stand it. So all right, we gets up. And starts off for the next roadhouse. We got to Yukon Crossing, we started at 2 o'clock in the morning, 22 below. So in April, about the April 17th. And I had them Canadian shoe packs on there, and one I guess I didn't tie very good, and it kind of chased my heel. So we knocked at this roadhouse, and it wasn't up. So we crossed the Yukon Crossing, just got across the Yukon, and found the Yukon bed on the other side there, spruce boughs, and lay in that bed for a while, the sun coming up, you know.
You crossed on the ice?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back to that, later. So you didn't quite make the load as we intended to, Minto.
Mm-hmm.
We were just 5 miles off short of Minto, where we stopped at some ex-mine policemen at a roadhouse there. That's the best bed we had on the road.
Jack just admitted he was here.
So these mining policemen give me hot water and give me something to put on my heel. And then the next morning they gave us a lunch to take with us. It was only just 5.5 miles from the Minto, so we just lose 5.5 miles on that day, but we made it up the next. We stopped at Minto, not a lunch there. Then we went on to Selkirk. Let's see, Selkirk is a part of the river. And we stopped at the roadhouse there, and then Sweet got sick. So he stayed in quite a while the next day, so I stayed with him. And then he left later on the day to make our two posts. So the next roadhouse we got to was called Rooms. And the Canadian was there at Rooms, having a supper. And he decided to stay. Found out later we happened to have got sunburn. So we started on for the next one during the night, and we got there. I think we were on the road to Bud Creek, so it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. Next day we left for Stewart. And we come over to some cabin on that road to Creek where they give us some day tea. Well, we got into Stewart, which was 23 miles. Then from Stewart, we started off on the next 23 miles to Wounded Moose. We was at Wounded Moose when this Canadian showed up on the stage. What do you call it, sunblind?
He got sunblind.
He came in on the stage. So the Swede left us there, and he went out. He was going on to the creeks, back to the old creeks, to the old Dominion, Lower Dominion. And we were headed for Dawson. So from there, we went on to Eureka and stopped there overnight. Then from Eureka, let's see that Teddy Perry, what's that? Is it? No, this is.
Hey,
I'm wiping some of the other soil. Let's see what I got. Mm-hmm.
Stop.
No, but I started
talking
there.
No, I run on the wrong side.
I got it on the wrong side, so you got to
start from here. I've got it with the other side full. I'll go back and show you.
Well,
don't worry.
I
just bought the light bulb. I went down below, set up there, and I get up all afternoon. He pulled out
another
wire
off.
Huh? It's only off the side of the tape. I'm putting it on two sides.
Huh?
Now let's start this side. Not yet. Now you tell about the
soaping
your foot. Remember you tell about soaping your foot.
Yeah. Yeah, so the man briefly gave me some hot water to soak my heel in. Give me something to rub on there. Then the next morning we got up to give you lunch, and we started off to the Minto. Minto, we stopped at a lunch, and then we went on to Powder River. I think that's the name of the place, Valley River.
Mm-hmm.
Selkirk. And that's where that thing was telling me about, you know, see? Was it caught in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we stayed there overnight, and the next morning the Swede didn't feel very good. He wanted to rest a while, so I stayed there with him. Later on the day we started off. And from there, we started to make our two posts, as they call them on the Canadian side, two roadhouses. And we stopped at this place called Yumes. And there we found a Canadian. He was eating his supper and he decided to stay overnight. We decided to go on. So we missed on during the night, over the hills, and down to the next roadhouse. And the next roadhouse was somewhere in the vicinity of Rosewood Creek. So we got there about 1 o'clock in the night, stayed there, and the next day we started off for Stewart River Roadhouse. While messing up on Rosewood Creek, we come across two men that stayed in the cabin there, and they made some Hudson Bay tea, the first I'd ever seen. I might have seen it, but they didn't know what it was. The first I'd ever drank. There are some in this country around here. They had a green leaf with a kind of brown color in the bite.
You never heard the name of that,
Just Hudson Bay tea, that's all I ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can find them all. They've got a pointed leaf, small, just about the size of a leaf of tea.
Mm-hmm.
So, we got to Stewart Roadhouse, stayed there that night. And next morning, we started off at the next 23 miles. These two roadhouses are 23 miles apart, which is called Wounded Moose. So we got the Wounded Moose and I'd sent her out there. In the meantime, the stage comes in. There comes the Canadian on the stage. Why does it mean he had the he had been sunburned.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed there. So then the Swede left us and went over to the Mineral Creek. He went towards the Regular Creek, so into the Mineral Way. And we were heading for Dawson. Well, we got to Eureka that night and stayed there overnight. Then from Eureka, we made it to Quartz Creek. There was a roadhouse in between there. Anyway, there was a roadhouse in between. That's where Ted Fowler's father and mother was running that roadhouse. Ted Fowler used to work here for the Pigeon Ridge Mill and Indy. So, he was working in the Dawson Trading Company when I was up in Dawson. Well, we stopped at Quartz Creek overnight. Then we went up Calder, over the summit, and down El Dorado, onto Gold Bottom, on the Randy, and down to
we went down to a place just below 14 below where the magnet was.
I forget the name of the woman that was in that place at the time. But next door to her was, they call that, just where they were that hill leading down to the magnet, was what they call Pablo de Gaia. And next door was a man that was a teamster, the camp I looked at the year before. So we stayed there all night, and he gave me some to soak my feet with too. And then we went into Dawson.
Yeah, it was only about 25 miles, 20 miles from Dawson there.
No, he wasn't not there, no.
From Magnus, it's about 25 miles, or 30 miles to Dawson.
No, this is a place
Find the mouth of Alvarado.
Klondike
City? That's a gold button they want. No, not Klondike City. The railroad won't stop there. It's right across from the... at the mouth of the Alvarado. It's really turn right.
It's called Klondike City on this old map. Before you get to
that. No, Klondike City was where the lifestyle was.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And there's Bear Creek, that goes up to Gold Bottom. I mentioned Gold Bottom before, but this wasn't Gold Bottom. This was blue, opposite Gold Hill there.
It says pure gold on
him,
the sign.
Opposite Gold Hill. There are three hills there that carried white channel.
White.
Yes, there was a wooden mine on the hill there. There's Gold Hill, Chichalka Hill, and French Hill.
That's right.
Now this was right opposite Gold Hill. Just 12 miles from town, that place.
That's about what that is out there.
Mm-hmm. But see, we were lower down. We were just a few miles lower down from there, where the magnet was, and where the part of the bar was. That was around 14 or 15 below there. Let's see, that's Gold Hill, the hill there right opposite this place. I can't think of the name of the place. Try to get these things all at once. I can think of them when I might be talking about something else and be able to mention that right at Grand Forks.
Grand Forks?
Yeah, that's the name of the place. Mm-hmm. Grand Forks. That was 12 miles from town. Mm-hmm. So then we got into the garden and... let's see, I mentioned before, didn't I, about where I work? But look at...
Number 9 on
Eldorado, huh? Yeah. No, not on Eldorado. On Bonanza.
On Bonanza
Creek. Yeah, that's just before you come to Grand Forks. The Horn brothers, they had 14 and they had 9 below.
Well, what kind of a camp...
that's just a picking up there, right?
What kind of a camp did you live in there? What kind of a camp? What kind of buildings or tents or what did they live in?
Well, they had log cabins.
Log cabins?
Yeah. And got a diamond.
How many men is in a cabin?
Hmm.
One of you?
How much of
you
in one cabin? I don't remember. Now, let's see. On this side, there's about three on this side, three on the other side. There's a man who was looking down where we were digging to see a frost. Just hit it with a pick first and just make a dent. The second time make a crack and the next time get a peek off. Mm-hmm. On the side we were working. And then it glanced off and went right through my feet pipe.
Yeah, and that's when you hurt yourself.
Yes, and then I had to get up on the top and went in between the toes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wouldn't let you lay around there. Mm-hmm. And laid me off. That was the 10th day. And I worked there. It got easier after that. After things got hard, then it got easier.
Mm-hmm.
That was all I had left.
What's the permafrost over there? There's lots of permafrost in that country. Frozen year-round.
Well, now I'm into Dawson. Now you might as well stop for a minute and see what it was.
You hurt your foot in
1909. That was 1909.
Mm-hmm.
I went out in the creeks looking for work after I got in. I stayed at the Principal Hotel. I stayed at the Principal Hotel and went out in the creeks and started looking for work. So I went on to Guggenheim and they were wanting nothing but what they call them men that climbed? Rigger, yeah, they wanted nothing but a rigger at that time. So I finally took that job at 9 below there. But I mentioned that already about 9 below.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from there, after hurting my foot, they wouldn't let me stay in the camp, so I had to go over to Grand Forks, just a little ways off. And I stayed in the cabin there for a while. Took care of my own foot. And then I went to Dawson, stayed at the Principal Hotel. Stayed there for a while. I'm trying to think what I did between then and going to work at the digging vegetables for Bill Paddock over at West Dawson. He had 6 hours there in the big garden.
What is his full name?
Bill Paddock.
Bill Paddock?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He had a brother called Charlie Paddock that had a hot house right
in the center of the town also.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember in the fall I went to work there and dug vegetables, and then after they laid the woman off, I cooked for the owner, for Bill Paddock, and another man there that he kept there for his teamster, and they hauled wood for the, you know, to start the hot houses up with in the spring. All wood during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Then all caribou for people that shot caribou. All the men get about a quarter of what they all in for payment. So while I was cooking for them there during the winter, I got salivated. I don't know what I got salivated from. I hadn't been around any quicksilver.
Mm-hmm.
After I fixed them some to eat, well, then I felt like I want to lay down.
Mm-hmm.
My teeth came loose.
Uh-oh.
And Bill Parrott told me to go over and see Doc Cribbs that runs the drugstore just at the corner of the alleyway alongside the post office on King Street. I went to see him. He gave me two mouthwashes. One before and one after meal. So then in the spring, I started peddling vegetables for him around town.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, I had a little kind of a place in the Wilson Brick Building on Third. Joe Sellers had charge of it, and I had a corner there where I had my vegetables. But I used to have a push cart for Bill Paddock and push it around town there and go and sell these vegetables.
You took the push cart and went from door to door?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I went round the street with it. Yes. Yes, I went round from door to door.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, he opened up a store in town, put somebody else in charge of that store, so I got a place of my own, a warehouse in the Wilson Building, and had my sign out there, J.C. Crook Flowers and Vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I peddled all over the town there. And then I got hold of a rig and a couple of horses and started peddling out to the creeks. So Paddock also had a rig that went out to the creeks. So I went out there this year. Scotty used to go out to the creek, so he'd quit. I went around there, and I had better vegetables than Bill Paddock had. I bought them from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I paddled there as long as I could until I started to get some vegetables frozen, going up making a trip around the creek, going up Bonanza and up a Bonanza and up El Dorado, down Calder into Quartz Creek, and up. Well, you do think of people, don't you?
Well, he's just stopping a minute. He's going to have something to eat. You want to stop it?
Here comes another of my dreams, eh? Now, who'd have heard? Went up Quartz Creek to the summit. And stopped at the summit, then down from the summit, down Sulphur Creek, into Lower Dominion, to Granville, up Lower Dominion, Upper Dominion, and over the summit, down into Gold Bottom, stopped at Gold Bottom, went down Hunker, through Burr Creek, and back into Dawson. Now, after having some vegetables frozen, when I got to, when one of the team backed me off of the hill at Poverty Bar, just above the Magnet, and upset my vegetables, and I had to go up to Grand Forks to stop overnight, come back and pick things up, and things was frozen, so then I quit after that trip and went to work in the Rochester Cafe, washing dishes. I worked in the Rochester Cafe for quite a while, and then later I worked in the M&M Cafe at the corner of 1st and King Street. Lots of cafes at the corner of 2nd and King. Later on, I went to work in the Union Bakery on 2nd Avenue in the middle of the block, a place which has been burned down since. I haven't noticed after I was up in Dawson in 1951. So, from the Union Bakery, there was a man came into town while I was working there. A Jew waiter used to be down in Fairbanks here one time before, around 1905 or so, called Bill Adler, a New York Jew. He come into Dawson and couldn't get any work, so I let him move in the cabin with me. He finally talked me into coming down here. So I bought the rowboat and the grub, and left Dawson in the early morning, about 2 o'clock or so, on the 16th day of July, 1911. I made it in 5 days to Circle. I had to stop at Eagle to get clearance, and made it to Circle in 5 days. Then from Circle, I sold my boat and made it in 5 days from Circle to Fairbanks, walking over the trail. I arrived in Fairbanks, stopped at the Fairview Hotel. First place I stopped here. Bill Adler started to work almost right away, waiting table. He worked in the model there for a while. Later on, I worked in the model myself. Then I worked on the steamer Swatka between Fairbanks and Tanna. And I got off at Tanna in the fall and went to work in a restaurant down there called the California Cafe. I worked there all winter and come up to Fairbanks. During this time, before I left Chena, the old town of Chena, Mount Katmai blew its top. And there was ashes all over the dock of Chena. So I came up on the, just after the 4th of July, the man that run the cafe beat it away and left another man lie there. And then somebody put the lien on the property, and so I didn't get no wages out of it. Then I came into town, and I was sitting in the model, but the 6th of July, there was quite an earthquake. People run out of the old model cafe, which was just about opposite the USO, where the USO is now, and telephone poles were swinging back and forth, and things swinging on the shelves in the restaurant. It lasted a few minutes. So later I went to work in the Pioneer Cafe, in the Pioneer Hotel building, for Mrs. Card.
What was her name?
Mrs. Card, C-A-R-D.
Mrs. Card.
Yeah. I started to work for her, but an awful time trying to get some money. I had to ring the bell to bring her in there if I wanted something to carry me on for the night. Maybe I need some grease, something to make pie dough with or something of that kind. And a man called Fred, something up there, married to a woman that afterwards married Charlie Maine, died here. Then I worked in the old model for a while. In 1915, I went on the Julie B, the Pantaloon. When I come in the fall, I started working the Germania Cafe, which was in the same block where the old model was, across from the USO. No, this Germania Cafe was just about where the Fairbanks liquor store is now. And right where that alleyway is, Burnfield Alley, that was Billy Kramer's Faction Saloon. And on the other end of the street, he had it for a beer garden, had it fenced around. So when the First World War came on and the prices of things started to go up, Germania Cafe, was a four-bit place. There was the Viana and the next block. So as the prices of stuff went up, George Johnson talked me into going partners with him. adjoining the Northern Hotel. So we brought the building together and opened that up on December the 10th, 1917, which we called the Igloo Grill. He wanted some old-time name, being that it was the pioneer of the Northern. We called that the Igloo Grill. So there we raised the price of 6 bits, same price as the old Modern. And I had a waitress up to 3 o'clock in the morning, Jim Mulrooney's wife. I get, that's the first job she ever had in this town. She was waiting at the table on my shift till 3 o'clock in the morning, and then I was all alone. I had to be the night cook, the baker, the dishwasher, and swamper. Wait at the table after she left. September the 2nd, 1917, if you wasn't 31, you had to register. So I wasn't 31 before December the 24th. So I had to register. And then in 1918, my number came up in the first draft. So I hadn't been to see the dentist yet. I went to see Doc Myers up above the First National Bank. And he said, my teeth ain't get to me from notice of service. They had been a little bit dropping off every once in a while since I got salivated up in Dawson there, when they got softened. So he said, do you want to be exempted? I said, no. So we went down to see old man Alec and I can't think of the other man's name. But went to see the local board number 17, just about 2 doors away from there. And that's where I wanted to be exempted. I said, no. So they made arrangements to have the doctor come and visit in the dentist's office about 2 days from then. So me working the night shift, I went over there on this date, and they stood behind me and looked in the mirror, and then I was exempted from another service. I want to be exempted. I put in the limited service. There happened to be short drafts in between the first draft and the last draft. I tried to get in then when any one of those small drafts could all go at the same time if they wanted. Said no, I had to wait. So on the last draft, they drafted the limited service also. My name was added to the list. About 10 of us. So then, October the 1st, 1917, we left here. I sold my half interest to George Johnson. And half an hour before I left, I went marched over from this office, from this local board at number 17, across to the old Tanna Valley Railroad Depot, and went down to Chile, and the government boat, the General Jacobs, was there waiting for us to take us down to Tanna. We picked up some at Nenana on the way down. Then we got to Tanna. There for a little while, I was working on the wood saw 8 hours a day. 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. Wrestle cream every night after supper, kitchen police on Sunday. So I didn't have much to do. Then they was getting ready, the last boat was coming up, I'm going to go outside. So this corporal of this crew that I was working with on this wood saw detail, he went to see the doctor for me. He was going to try and help me to get outside. I didn't want to get stuck there. The man on the other saw was Waldo Finger from Fairbanks here. He was on the gas saw and we were on the old Nancy Hanks. She was a steam saw. And we had to go through 3 weeks before we moved her. Each man, available man, there was one to rest on the start, and he'd wait so long, then he'd relieve one of the men, and then the next man would relieve another man and keep on till it went through the works. And when it come to the third row, or the man on the, they'd take every available man, one man pick up that stick, pass it over to the next man, next man move it over the next man, then be onto the saw, and the man would throw it off. So this man took me up there to see the doctor, and the doctor went with me up to the commanding officer to see if I couldn't get outside. I wasn't supposed to be able to eat fast enough for frontline trench work. Well, being that I happened to be a cook and a baker, I didn't have to go in the frontline trench. So he says, doctor, that caused a lot of trouble making these papers out. Some of the men from here did manage to get something changed ahead of me. Those Johnny Allen and two or three others around here that managed to get away. So, he says, what is the, and the boats have come back down here yet? So there happened to be one boat that had to come back to get some more rails. They were lightering the rails into the Tanai River. They'd taken a certain amount off, and there's some more left on the barge there yet, which had to be moved. And they'd had to make one more trip there. So I told him, no, the last boat is down. So he wired down to Major White at Fort Seward, a transmission, which afterwards called the Chilkoot Barracks. He cabled under Major White, 10 limited servicemen here, no transportation, only over the ice at great expense. What shall I do? So then that kept us there.
You stayed there all winter?
Stayed there all winter. And after working on the woodsaw for 3 weeks, 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, rest of the men every night after supper, KP on Sunday. On the third, in the meantime, while I'm on this KP on Sunday, one of the cooks, happened to be an outside restaurant man, wanted me to come in. The man that was working with him was kicking about some bacon, but on the bill of fare. And well, I said, don't put anybody out for me. If anything happens, that's different. So after the third week, I was ordered over to the pantry on a Friday. So I went on shift at Friday noon in the pantry. Then these two cooks come on shift. They always come on at noon. That's when they change, just after noon, about 12:30, after the meal served. And they cook the supper, and then cook the breakfast, and cook the next noon meal. Then they go off, and the other watch comes on. So these two men come on, and when this man saw me, the one that the other man wanted to get to leave, wanted to take his place, so he saw me, comes over to me and says, where in the hell did you get the drag? I says, I don't know anything about any drag. All I know, I was ordered to report to you. And I felt just the way about it, the way that I spoke. If he said much more, well, it might have been a little bit interesting. So the next morning, after inspection was over with, he started to jump around then. The company commander came in there with the mess sergeant. Said to this man, Williamson, I understand you want to be relieved. Well, sir, I was thinking about asking for a leave first of the month. You'll be relieved right now. And from this time on, John Leaders were the third cook. That was a Greek that was a fourth cook, but there was only paying three cooks, only three on the cook's payroll, but he was the fourth cook. And whatever the mess sergeant puts on the bill of fare must be cooked or baked. I do not want to hear anything more about it. Now, that was from my ears and the other cook, not for it. And my name wasn't even mentioned, because I wasn't going to be classed as a cook. So he went into the cook squadron, packed up his footlocker, and asked me to give him a hand up in the barracks up above. I gave him a hand, and when we got up there, he helped me with mine down into the squadron. So I moved into the cook squadron and worked there as a cook, but I wasn't getting any cook's pay, only private pay. So one day later, there was some peas on the bill of fare. And I looked in the supply room, and I couldn't find enough peas for that many men. Wherever the mess sergeant had them, and I couldn't see them. I haven't worked in grocery stores, I'm so used to putting things just exactly where I can put my hands on them. So I spoke to Shorty, and I said, Shorty, I said, I can't find enough peas for this many men. So he growled at the mess sergeant, and the mess sergeant thought there was something between Shorty and I. So he suggested switching me to the Greek. And the man we call Austrian Joe, his name happened to be Costello, so he must have been Italian, with him. So he made the change. So he took notice when each shift commander, when they come on shift, he got told he was looking like he was looking a hole through the wall. When we come on shift, he was all smiles. So then Charlie got told he couldn't stand it. So up on the bulletin board in the recreation room, there was a notice. Cook James LaBelle, CO number so-and-so, will be reduced to private. Private John C. Crook will be promoted to cook, must be obeyed accordingly. So then I got cook's pay, which amounted to $11 a month more. So then I was listed as cook crook. That was my grade then. The last month that I was there, the baker re-enlisted and got on furlough. And talked me into taking over the bake shop. So I went up and asked if there's any difference in pay. He's only corporal base, and I'm getting sergeant's pay. So finally I took that over. That lost me $3 during that month because we had five lieutenants that ate in the dining room. They didn't pick up any dishes. The dining room orderly picked up the dishes and took them in there. And they each left $3 for each one of us. There was four cooks and the dining room orderly. Now I took over that bake shop to accommodate the old post so that the each organization wouldn't have to try and bake their own bread whether they could or not, and the married families would also have to bake their own. So I took over the post baker for the last month. Well, and we got discharged on the 19th day of, on the 16th day of June, 1919.
Now you're
and we got it, well, and we got in Fairbanks on the 21st day of June, the longest day. There was a band on the dock there waiting for us, and they played when we arrived here. Mm-hmm. They allowed us 5 cents per mile, and it cost me 10 cents per mile to get back.
You didn't make nothing on it.
No.
Now, you're going to end up this part of your story, and we'll take some more later on start
okay.
The reel, because this is the end of the reel.
That's fine. That's
and this is a story by Jack Cook, a member of Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska, at Fairbanks, Alaska, taken in the home of Harry Hughes at 2:15:06. And this is February the 12th, 1960. In about 10 minutes, it'll be February the 13th. And Jack, we'll get some audio a little later on the story. And thanks for this.
Yeah, we'll do that little bit.
Now,
you know, I'm getting up.